Hello, this is Dina Eccles here at the studios of WDRT Viroqua, Wisconsin. I often remember the four levels of human perception described by Socrates. Opinion was the lowest and easiest form. Belief came next, fact and reason followed, but the supreme understanding available to a human being was to know. These days we're bombarded by opinions, beliefs, and facts that are readily discounted, and the ability to actually know eludes us. But for caring human beings, the need to know is our right, and sometimes unearthing that knowing takes deep listening. Every year on May 15th, Palestinians around the world commemorate Nakba, or catastrophe, which marked the 1948 destruction of Palestinian society and homeland and the permanent displacement of Palestinian people. In honor of Nakba, you're welcome to learn today from the voices of Palestinians. Our first guest is Amin Atta. Amin attends the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, and is a board member of the Muslim Student Association. He has also been deeply involved in the UW's encampment. So welcome, Amin.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Yeah, it's an honor, actually, for me to have you speak. So I'd like to begin with being a young Palestinian, an American Palestinian living in the United States. As you've learned about everything happening in Gaza, how has that affected you?
Yeah, I'd say from a young age, you know, I remember being part of demonstrations, you know, protests, activism, you know, from a very young age, just because my parents were involved, my family was involved. I really grew up in the struggle for Palestinian liberation, and that's kind of all I ever knew. And so, you know, as I grew up and as I start to get more involved in school and then high school and then, you know, now in college, I just kind of see it as a direction that, it was natural for me to follow in terms of, uplifting the voices of Palestinians, who are suffering and being part of a change that will hopefully lead to Palestinian liberation. I'd say that I'm very, very proud to be Palestinian. I'm proud to be part of such a resilient group of people who will never give up for their fight for liberation, and who have so much hope, so much passion, so much drive. So I'm absolutely proud of who I'm able to represent, and the fight will continue until we can gain, you know, the freedom and you know, dignified lives for all Palestinians here and in Palestine.
Mm. Yes, and you say dignified lives. I think a lot of people, because of the way the media has been and the way Palestinians have been portrayed and Israel has been portrayed for decades now, I don't think people understand what you mean when you want to live a dignified life. I don't think people understand the circumstances in Palestine, even before October 23. Do you want to speak about that?
Yes, absolutely. I think that, you know, when I say dignified life, there are freedoms and liberties that every human being should be able to enjoy. You know, the freedom of life, the freedom, you know, to live a life where one can explore their freedoms, explore their passions, where one has access to resources that should be available to all humans, from, you know, water to food, to, you know, the ability to travel and, you know, roam freely in a land, the ability to receive an education, the ability to go to school, to buy property, to buy real estate, to, you know, to own a business, to engage in business and organizations and all of these things. I think that that is a right and a freedom that all humans should be able to enjoy. And what we have with Palestinians who are living in the West Bank and living in Gaza, truly living under siege and under occupation, an occupation that deprives Palestinians many of these freedoms and rights that human beings should be able to enjoy. And so when I say dignified life, I think that means breaking through those barriers of ending that occupation and, you know, subjugation of a people that has resulted in loss of life, it has resulted in displacement, it has resulted in an apartheid system that really differentiates and discriminates based on the fact that, you know, they're Palestinian. And so I think moving beyond that, moving towards liberation, that is really what that means.
Right, and I think a lot of people misunderstand that and or don't have not even ever heard anyone mention it in that way. And so the view of Palestinian people as terrorists, you know, I saw a meme that you had on one of the Instagrams that said freedom fighters were what the French were called when they were standing up to the Germans. But the Palestinians are known as terrorists. Can you address that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is a narrative that's pushed by mainstream media and by Zionist propaganda to further this, you know, Zionist agenda, because the Zionist agenda, which is, and when I say Zionist agenda, I mean this this project, this colonial project that, you know, took place, you know, starting 1948 and even before then, to basically ethnically cleanse Palestinians out of their land. This is a project that has hurt so many, and I think that now, when you think of, well, who is framed as terrorists, that's part of that propaganda. And the only way that, you know, the narrative, that the Zionism agenda will survive, is if they're able to convince people that Palestinians are terrorists, when the reality is, there's an occupying people, and then there's the people who are occupied. There is a people who are under a siege, and that is the Palestinians. You know, you cannot say that, you know, the oppressed are the ones who are the terrorists. You know, when they're under an occupying power, they're under colonial rule, they're under an oppressive, subjugating power, they don't have their own freedoms. So, you know, and this is, of course, internationally recognized, that Palestine is occupied, and we have an oppressed people who are, you know, being oppressed day in and day out, who are struggling against their oppressor. You know, there's a David and Goliath situation here, where you have the oppressed fighting against, trying to resist against their, you know, powerful oppressor. And when I say powerful, I think, you know, people really need to understand the magnitude of that, that the United States of America, you know, makes Israel so powerful. It's one of the most intelligent armies on the face of the earth, one of the most sophisticated, one of the most well-funded, against a people who don't even have really anything to defend themselves with, because they are under this occupation. And so I think that is, you know, truly people need to, you know, learn this information for themselves, so they can truly find out what are the facts and what is the reality of the situation at hand.
Right, and it's not always easy to find that those narratives, as you say, and so that's really why I wanted to do this show, was to give you an opportunity to speak to people. Because I think listening to the radio a lot of times, or on a podcast, people can take in what maybe they couldn't, you know, or wouldn't normally hear. And I'm hoping that's right. The case, you know, because we fear what we don't know. And so this is your chance to help people find their humanity by helping them to hear yours. And so I really appreciate this.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. And so being here, I mean, God, I can't even imagine to be in this country hearing the narratives. I mean, I heard this morning on the radio that people in Israel are being told that there's plenty of food in Gaza, that there's no need for the convoys of food and trucks to come in. And this is how propaganda works everywhere, you know. Mm-hmm. So we have to find ways to help each other understand. So another issue that comes up is you're part of the Muslim Student Association, which I assume means that you're Muslim.
I am, yes.
Okay. Can you talk about that? What is your experience as a Muslim in this country?
Yeah, I think you know, generally it's been positive. You know, I'm a Muslim here, you know, born and raised in America, and I think that my identity as an American can fit in, you know, very well, and does fit in very well with my identity as a Muslim. You know, when it comes to the positives, you know, I think that I've been able to, you know, immerse myself in American culture. You know, I was born here, I was raised here. You know, I have the same types of hobbies. I have the same, you know, passions, you know, the patriotism, of course. So there's so much that I think that I enjoy as an American here living in this country. And I think my Muslim identity is just a representation of, you know, my faith, my culture, that fits in very well in this society that I grew up in. I think when it comes to some of the negatives that we hear in terms of, you know, discrimination or racism and things like that, you know, unlike, you know, Muslim women who are, you know, very visibly identifiable, you know, when they wear the hijab, when they wear the headscarf. For me, you know, I'm not, you know, just, you know, walking down the street, I wouldn't be able to be recognized as a Muslim. So, you know, while I do recognize that, of course, you know, there's discrimination, there's racism, you know, that occurs in this country, I also recognize, you know, the point of privilege that I have, in that I may have, you know, I'm not a good sign of somebody who has experienced that just because I'm not, you know, visibly Muslim. And unfortunately, you know, that discrimination, you know, and the racism often happens just based on a visible look. You know, if you see a, you know, a woman in a headscarf, you know, automatically assume that she's, you know, oppressed, or, you know, that she's being controlled, or, you know, all this propaganda. So I do recognize that that is a reality. But I think my experience and, you know, my faith has taught me that I'm able to fit in really any society. And I think the American society is one that I've been able to thrive in here.
Well, that is a lovely explanation. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Because I know, I mean, I've heard people make comments. I've heard people, I had someone tell me one time that they kept their guns because the Muslims were coming.
You know?
Yeah. So I know that there's a lot of misunderstanding, you know, and confusion. And I think a lot of it's intentional. People seem to enjoy keeping us all separated by one term or another. So, you know, to be able to have you talk in such a, I mean, positive way about your life here in America, I think would be really wonderful. I hope it is good for people to hear.
Right.
And the Muslim Student Association, what do you do?
Yeah, so, you know, we want to be a support for all Muslim students here on campus. And so that support, you know, extends to, you know, a wide range, from, you know, spiritual events to allow people to come closer to their faith. You know, we believe, you know, as a Muslim Student Association that, you know, people grow up in all types of different backgrounds. And for those who choose and who are comfortable and who want to get closer to their faith and, you know, develop a connection with their faith, we want to present an opportunity for them to do that in a way that fits them, in a way that's comfortable for them. So whether that be, you know, educational events, whether that be activism, whether that be just social events, you know, just gathering, being able to meet, you know, other people that share the same faith as you on your campus, just, you know, to socialize with one another, whether it be, you know, a humanitarian effort. You know, we've engaged in a lot of, you know, fundraisers and support for many of the causes around the world, and that also brings people together. And then, you know, aside from that, just support, you know, students who need help with something, you know, whether it be professional help, academic help, you know, spiritual help, just however we can, you know, try to extend a hand and be a resource for the many Muslim students who are on campus. So I think that's our mission, is trying to bring people together and develop those passions according to everybody's comfort level, and that's what we've done this year.
Excellent. Yeah, community is such a key thing, and you do. I have my experience from my Muslim friends is how much community means to them, how sacred it is, really. And also that extending outward to help others as well is something that I've noticed is so integral. I mean, that is how I was raised in my early years as a Christian, and was to, you know, to serve and to help. So that's thank you for that explanation. I'm sure that will help people counter a lot of things that they've heard. Now I'd like to focus a little bit on the encampment that's still ongoing, and I might say congratulations on that at the UW-Milwaukee campus. Do you want to start commenting on that?
Yeah, you know, as part of MSA, you know, we're one of five organizations part of this overall coalition, and you know, all five organizations have, you know, been working tirelessly all year to, you know, put pressure on our university. You know, we need some kind of change. We've seen, you know, the you know, racist, the subjugating, occupying, colonial, apartheid state of Israel. We've seen the damage that they've done, you know, just in the past 7 months alone, not including, you know, the 75 years of occupation, but just in the past 7 months, we've had over 34,000 people killed. And in that number is 15,000 children. And I think people really need to ask themselves a question is, you know, when they see the encampments and if they're upset at the encampments, are you equally upset or outraged at the genocide that's taking place? And if you're able to be upset that we have some tents in our lawn at campus and we're peacefully protesting, and I, you know, reiterate and emphasize that it's been absolutely peaceful and even the university has acknowledged that we've been peaceful, but are you upset at our tents while ignoring a genocide? And I think that's really, really an important question, because if that's the case, if somebody is able to look away from slaughter, if somebody is able to look away from missile strikes, airstrikes, bombs, landing on apartment buildings. You know, we had a community member two nights ago share a story of losing over 50 members of their family in one airstrike, and the airstrike landed on an apartment building full of civilians. So if you are able to ignore that, but then you want to say something about the encampment, I think at an individual level, you'll have to really question your moral compass. You know, what do you stand for as a human being if, you know, something as simple as students, you know, protesting against something so disgusting outrages you, you know, puts you in outrage, but then what we're actually calling for, you know, you don't care about. So we've been working with the university, and unfortunately the progress has been so little that, you know, we answered the national call of the encampment movement around the country, which has been very effective, and we started our own to demand some real action from our university.
Right, and yeah, it's been really wonderful too. I've been paying close attention, and you talked about five organizations. They're student organizations that you're talking about that have come together for that encampment.
Yes, that is the Muslim Student Association, Students for Justice in Palestine, Students for a Democratic Society. I think it's called Young Democratic Social Association, and then UNPAC, which is Unpolitical Action Committees. They stand against the, you know, the PACs and the lobbies for in the government.
And you've had a lot of Jewish students supporting the campus, the encampment.
Yeah, I mean, it's beautiful. Yesterday, we, you know, in the afternoon, we had our Muslim prayer service on the encampment, and then in the evening, we had the Jewish service. We had the Shabbat service also at the encampment, and, you know, I participated in both. We have, you know, Jewish faculty and Jewish students and Jewish community members who have, you know, been there, you know, supporting. I mean, they've really taken a principled stand, and, you know, it's unfortunate because they've shared that they've been ostracized from the Zionist community. You know, they're labeled as, oh, self-hating Jews and, you know, this and that, when all they're doing is they're taking a stand against an apartheid government. You know, they say that we don't have to be Jewish. You don't have to support Israel in order to be Jewish. You know, you can be Jewish and stand for morality and, you know, stand for humanity and be able to separate your faith from a government that's engaging in mass slaughter. And so that's what they've done, and it's unfortunate that they have been ostracized by the Zionist Jewish community, but we welcome them, you know, on the lawn, of course, and they're always welcome, just like anybody else who stands for humanity.
Yes, I was down in Madison when the encampment began there, and I was so touched by the way people, the students surrounded the Muslim people when they began to pray and gave them that protection. And then at the same time, you know, there were other prayers and other offerings made, and how respectful everyone was and how peaceful it was, you know, to watch that encampment be taken down and then brought back again. And of course now it's no longer there, but it was, I'm glad I was able to get there. And quite honestly, I'd love to get down to Milwaukee, because I keep hearing about the meals you all are getting, and they sound pretty amazing.
Yeah, you know, we've had community support. I think that's one thing that's been a huge sign of strength for the encampment, is the amount of community support we've been receiving. You know, people are passing by and stopping by and say, hey, how can I help? How can I support? I'll do anything. You know, do you need money? Do you need donations? Do you need supplies? Do you need tents? Do you need food? Do you need warmth? You know, whatever it is, they're saying, you know, what you guys are doing is amazing, you know, taking a principled stand, you know, standing for truth and justice in the face of falsehood and oppression. And so they're more than willing to support us. And we've just had, you know, it's been overwhelming, the outpour of community support. And it's great to see that, because, you know, there was a world and there was a time where, you know, you couldn't even utter the word Palestine
right.
without getting pushback.
Right.
And that wasn't even too long ago. I remember, you know, when people would ask me, oh, where am I from or where are my parents from? I would hesitate to even say the word Palestine because people say, oh, what's that? Oh, do you mean Israel? Oh, you know, this and that. And so I think it's just a real moment of unity to see now how much, you know, how much support the cause for Palestinian liberation is getting, and the fact that people are waking up to the reality of the oppressive and, you know, racist Israeli system that truly seeks an end to Palestinian life that, you know, we're trying to push really hard back against.
And one of that pushback has to be, you know, you say the Israeli government. It's real, to be really clear, you didn't say the Jewish people. And I think that that's something that keeps being missed and misunderstood, that there's a particular government in place, Netanyahu's government in place, that's even more right-wing than some have been, and that people need to come out from under that that narrative, you know, that everything that, if you stand against Israel in this moment, that you're standing against Jewish people. It's just not true.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, we've explained ourselves time and time and time again to the point
yeah.
where I think now those who still try to conflate our calls for anti-Israel being and anti-Zionism as being anti-Jewish, you know, I don't think those are any sincere attempts at understanding what we're trying to say. I think those are deliberate attempts to conflate,
mm-hmm.
To try to stir up hate and divide people,
mm-hmm.
and cause people and prevent people from supporting us. But I think it's very clear, you know, of course, you know, before 1948, we had Muslims, Christians, and Jews, you know, living in that region peacefully together.
And may they again.
Yeah, and they will again soon. I think right now the Israeli system is preventing that. You know, when I was in Palestine, my grandma lives there, and her quality of life compared to just, you know, you drive not even, you know, 15, 20 minutes to the other side of the wall where now they have, you know, it's one of the most heavily developed, technologically advanced civilization societies, because it relies on that apartheid system where one group of people is treated differently than another group of people simply because of the fact that they're Palestinian. And so we seek to dismantle that racist ideology. And of course, we want Muslims, Christians, and Jews to live peacefully together in the region.
Thank you for that. That was very clear. I'm hoping that people are taking this in. So the encampments, they're going strong, right? You take classes. You offer each other classes and things and to, you
yes.
know, keep the morale. Go ahead.
Yes, we have a variety of activities. We have amazing teams, you know, from a security team to logistics team to supplies team, so many different teams. And one of those teams is the logistics team. And on that team, they actually work on planning an itinerary every day so that, you know, each day there's some form of educational presence there, you know, whether that be a teach-in, whether that be, you know, a community activity. Then, you know, each day, you know, there's, you know, various creative, you know, there's art workshops, you know, there's, you know, poetry, there's, you know, things that really allow people to come together, to socialize, to build a community. And we've been calling it a community. It really feels like a, you know, like a neighborhood, like a small family. And so we have been doing that each and every day. And even the university acknowledged that, you know, we've had diverse, you know, cultural, educational efforts that have been taking place every single day. And I think that's, once again, just a sense of pride for the students who have organized this, that they've been able to do so well in having such an amazing atmosphere.
Yeah, I think you've really taken that understanding of organization to a whole nother level. And I just from what I've been able to witness from the outside and reading chats and looking at Instagram, and I'm so impressed that we all could benefit learning how to come together in our different silos and yet supporting one another. We've talked about our silos for a long time, but I don't think people are really understanding it as much as you have all come together to do that. Do you want to mention the demands that you're asking of the UW?
Yeah, so I think, you know, one of our most material and concrete demands is to disclose and divest. This is a little bit of a separate entity, and it's going to be a long game, you know, but this needs to happen. We are students at our university, and, you know, we deserve to know where the university's money is going. And, you know, if they're invested in weapons manufacturers or, you know, in anything that is, you know, profiting or supporting or benefiting off of this, you know, mass slaughter, this genocide that's taking place, then we don't want, you know, out of pride, you know, out of pride for our own university, we don't want our university to be funding something like that or supporting or benefiting from something like that. I mean, really the only way to know truthfully what our university's money is in is by disclosing. And then after we disclose that, we can see, you know, the UWM Foundation's investment portfolios, you know, then we can discuss, you know, what needs to be, what we need to divest from, you know, as a university to ensure that we have ethical standards, to ensure that we're not aiding and complicit, you know, that we have complicity in, you know, children and men and women being slaughtered. So that's one of them. And then, of course, we have the ending research partnerships and, you know, any academic or educational partnerships, because once again, that is legitimizing a government that is discriminating, you know, brutalizing a group of people. And so whether that be study abroad trips, whether that be, you know, research partnerships, whatever that, again, is profiting or benefiting or aiding in a genocide, and that would make us complicit. And then we also have, you know, one of the most bare minimum statements or bare minimum demands, which is just for the university to acknowledge what is happening, to condemn Israel for its atrocities, to condemn the genocide, to state the fact that, you know, every university in Gaza has been destroyed. You know, we are a university, and we need to condemn the destruction, the targeted, you know, the term for this is now scholasticide, where there is a deliberate targeting of educational infrastructure from buildings to faculty to students to staff. And that's exactly what's happened with every single university being destroyed there. So these are some of the demands, you know, for the university to call out these things, to disclose and divest, to end any ties, you know, whether that be study abroad trips, research partnerships, other private companies that do business with UWM that do business in Israel. These are the demands that we're looking for to end our complicity in this Israeli oppression.
Thank you for that. Very clear, concise. And yeah, sometimes things have to be dismantled. It's just the right thing to do. And I really applaud you all. I love you all for everything you're doing. It's time that, you know, we recognize our humanity and we end some of these, not some, all of this insanity. So, Amin, I really want to thank you for taking the time to be on this call today. And we're going to follow up with a friend of yours, I believe.
Yes.
So thank you very much.
No, thank you for having me. It's an honor.
Yeah, same here. You take care now.
You too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, welcome, everyone. If you're just tuning in, we're commemorating Nakba by hosting a conversation with Palestinian students about their efforts to stop the genocide in Palestine. Our second guest in this conversation is Jamila. She's a student at UWM and president for Students of Justice in Palestine. Welcome, Jamila. I have to ask you, what are Students for Justice in Palestine?
So thank you for having me, Dina. I appreciate you guys taking the time and giving us a voice. Students for Justice in Palestine is a nationwide student organization, our main purpose is advocating for Palestine, advocating for the injustices in Palestine. And like I said, it's a nationwide organization, and every school or most schools have their own chapters, and UWM has their own chapter that we started years ago. We basically aim to raise awareness about these issues, not just this past year, but we've been, you know, raising the issue about the issue of Palestine for many years. And we really help educate people and educate others about the occupation, about the injustices. But especially in these past 7 months, we've really promoted the Palestinian culture and making sure that our stories and our history and that culture isn't forgotten, as we also push for political change towards the free Palestine.
That cultural exchange, that has been wonderful, the things I've witnessed and learned. All these years, I knew so little about Palestinian people, and to read about, Tahrir's?
Yeah, Tahrir's, yeah.
Tahrir's, that's it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got to see some of the those dresses and the intricate design embroidery. It's just so beautiful.
Yeah. It is. It takes a lot of work.
Yeah, and it's just lovely to see the culture being preserved.
Yes, yes. The biggest thing that I know I fall for is culture is resistance.
Mm.
If you keep the culture alive, that alone is a big in your face to the occupier.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know this is true. I mean, I did spend some time at Standing Rock.
Yeah,
I was there for months. So I know about being in a tent, girlfriend. But and that whole thing of indigenous people maintaining their languages and just their culture. I mean, you know, in this country, we kept them from being able to do religious practices or ceremonial practices, I think is how they would look at it, for centuries, really. So,
yeah.
You know, I totally agree with you, and I commend you on that understanding and that you're working for that. Yeah, and it's interesting to hear that it's been going on for years. And so there is this understanding that this is the long run. This isn't a sprint.
Yes, it is a marathon.
Yeah, marathon. There you go. Right. And now you've taken this this opportunity to have a encampment at UW.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not an easy undertaking.
No, it's not. And honestly, it's like a last resort type of thing. We've honestly set these encampments as a measure for the school to listen to us. These past 7 months, and even way past the 7 months, but specifically these past 7 months, we've been talking back and forth with administration. I know I've had countless meetings with the administration, you know, countless emails back and forth, holding peaceful protests, holding educational events, and honestly, anything that you can think of, we've done it. Frankly, we've exhausted all measures, and the school didn't make an effort to care or didn't make an effort to do a change. And because of that lack of effort and that lack of change, that we've had to resort to this encampment for the school to simply just take us seriously.
Right.
That's the general basis of it. So, and now we're starting to see some, you know, the change in narrative, but it had to take an encampment for the school to really take us seriously.
Right, and that encampment is also supported by the local community.
Yes, immensely. We are very, very grateful. Like, the community is so supportive. But that just shows that because the community and the other students are so supportive of it, that's the population of the students. That's what the students' heads are at, and that's what the students' hearts are at. So not only are we, you know, doing this to, like, show the school we need you to take us seriously, but look at all the people that you should take seriously.
Right.
So, yeah, the encampment has many factors that have really helped our cause.
And the diversity, you know, yes. It just seems like that's such an important piece to this.
Yes. If you ever get the chance to stop by the encampment, you're going to see people that don't even look like each other. No one looks like each other in the encampment.
Mm.
You got Arabs, you got non-Arabs, you got indigenous Americans, you got Latinos, you know, Black people, you got, you know, Asians, South Asians, East Asians, you got people of every corner of the earth, either the countries that have been occupied or are facing similar situations, and countries that aren't.
Mm.
People, you know, the cause for Palestine is so, it's a deeply root of colonialism, and almost every country has been affected by colonialism. And with these encampments, we're raising awareness of those people's voices, like what's happening in Sudan,
right.
What's happening in Yemen. We're taking the chance to also acknowledge them, which is bringing in the diversity that we, you know, we are seeing. Because, you know, Palestine, again, it's not just the Palestinians, it's the people who have been occupied or, you know, has been affected by colonialism.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think we're seeing so many, the people from everywhere come and support this cause.
Yeah, I looked up the Students for Justice in Palestine on Instagram, UWM's Students
mm-hmm.
for, you know, and I watched a teach-in about Sudan. It was
mm-hmm.
quite, it was really impressive, actually, and so important that I think this thing of we've been divided for so long, this divide and conquer idea has worked so well to keep human beings from one another. You know,
yes.
People who should understand one another. We're, you know, our needs are the same, really.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really proud of you guys. I can't tell you how proud I've been, because it's making a difference. I mean, even just the fact that we can have this conversation on the radio here in this very rural part of Wisconsin, and hopefully it will be heard and people will share it.
The narrative is changing. I mean, I agree. I think it's the people like you who give us the opportunity to, you know, be able to talk about this. But, you know, before 7 months ago, before like less than a year ago, people didn't really know or necessarily care about the Palestinian cause. And now you have going from people not really knowing about it to now you have a whole movement that's going to be written down in history for years and years, happening in the span of, you know, a few months. So the narrative has been changing. Even if people kind of just get discouraged about it, the opportunities that we have now that we didn't have a few months ago, is really impactful.
So how do you handle some of the really obvious lies that are told? Like, one of the things I hear a lot is that there are outside agitators who are causing, that are making these encampments. I heard it on the radio today that someone is buying all of these expensive tents for you guys, and I just cracked up on that.
Everyone has the same tent from Walmart.
that was the retort of the reporter, I might tell you. But how do you handle that? I mean, it's got to be frustrating and whatever. But
in our campus specifically, we've had, you know, security people, people who know how to de-escalate situations. We know not to. We don't like giving the time of day to people who don't even want to humanize us. We're not there to argue. We're there to show what we stand for, and, you know, people have the right to counter protest. That's, you know, we're all expressing our First Amendment right. But they want a reaction, and we're not really giving them a reaction. Thankfully, we haven't had a problem where things escalated too quickly, but we have the people trained to de-escalate situations. People can still, you know, hate on a cause. Like, there's always going to be one or two counter protesters, but the majority of the people that are there are for Palestine, and they outnumber the Zionists 10-1. So because of that support and number-wise, if you have 10 people ignoring one person, that's, you know, that just shows where the movement really is at.
Mm. Yeah, I've been very impressed with the de-escalation, the attempts and the trainings and the things that I've witnessed. From afar, I haven't been right there, but again, from my own experience at Standing Rock, I know how important that was, because there was constantly that militarized police presence and, you know, the harassment and the potential of harassment. They always just can really get under your skin. So that effort that you guys are making is commendable.
Thank you. We try our best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it shows. So what else would you like to cover? How what are the demands like? And you said it's been a little difficult working with the administration. How is it now?
It's been definitely more productive than it has been. Literally a few weeks ago, we are, you know, communicating with administration. We are, you know, continuing those meetings. Again, nothing's official, but it is productive, and we are, you know, hopeful. But we're only able to get these meetings because of the encampment. We're only able to have these conversations now before the encampment, because of the encampment. So it just kind of taints, like, do you know what I mean? Like, it kind of taints, you know, your perspective on the school, where we've tried the same thing for 7 months, but now because we put tents on the lawn, they now want to listen to us.
I know, yeah.
It sucks, but, you know, again, it has to be done. And, you know, I hope the school learns from the situation where listen to your students before it has to get to this, you know, quote, extreme level. But yeah, I mean, the encampment has been such a welcoming environment. We've really, our biggest thing is, you know, being peaceful and remaining peaceful, educating, as you mentioned, the Sudan teach-in. We do teach-ins every day about different topics and different groups of people and everything. We'd like to give everyone a voice. You know, we have community members, you know, ranging from little kids to elderly who come to just join. Yeah, and it's not just students. It's a very big community. We hold interfaith prayers. Like, we hold Shabbat. We hold, like, Muslims Friday prayers. You know, Christian clergy like to come around and talk to people. So it's a very, and it's what students have told me, like, this is what college is like. You're seeing all these groups of people. You're talking with people that you probably will never talk to ever, because you just don't get that, you know, you don't get that chance to, but here's that chance to talk to them. And I just think that's beautiful, because, you know, you are really interacting with people that you probably would never have interacted with, and you're making friends, and, you know, everyone has their own story, and you're learning about their stories. And then I know yesterday, a few days ago, we had an event or in this encampment where we asked people their why. Like, why are you here in this encampment? Why are you here, you know, willingly sleeping on a tent?
In hailstorms.
In hailstorms, and when your dorm is right around the corner. Like, why did you choose that? And it was really pretty beautiful to hear, because everyone's story was the same, but different at the same time. Like, everyone's, you know, before story is different, where, you know, but they all ended with, where you're here for Palestinians, and we're here for the humanity. That's what they were there for, and I thought that was really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is it's a turning point. I mean, what is happening now, I kind of vaguely remember from the back in the day of Vietnam too, you know, and it was a turning point, and this will be a turning point, and we don't want to lose that momentum, you know. And I know a lot of colleges and universities are working with their students now on the demands.
Yeah, they are, and some schools have been very successful, some not so much, but just the fact that some schools have been able to do that, again, is the turning point. I mean, I'm glad that you mentioned Vietnam, because, like, if you in a historical sense, students have always been the front line and have always, now that we say they're on the right side of history, and that's simply because of the diverse nature of college and of the universities and how we're the most educated people in the world. Many of our full-time jobs is to study. Like, because you're there to study and there to learn, and you're staying educated and talking with people of different backgrounds and different perspectives, and that perspective, you don't see in media, and you don't see, and, you know, people talk about it that much. So having that perspective and seeing the atrocities of what's happening in Gaza and happening anywhere in the world is honestly where we really get our support. Like I said, this is like a humanitarian crisis, and people are realizing that the humanity, the people's humanity is really showing, and realizing about how dire the situation is and how humans always come first.
Yeah, this is why I keep, in every chance I get, I do bring up Vietnam, because I want people my age to remember, especially the ones that were on those front lines, you know, because it's been very easy. It becomes very easy to just settle into the status quo and just accept, you know, what media is telling us. And it's really time for people to have that awakening again, that thing, that passion that they felt as youth, that's still there. That's not gone. And to find ways to express the need for change and the need for our humanity.
So. Yeah, I agree. And it's funny, because at that time, like, you know, with the civil rights movement, women's suffrage, and, like, Vietnam and South Africa apartheid and stuff, in the moment it was considered controversial.
Absolutely.
It was so divided, and it was considered controversial. And we're seeing the same, but then now we're looking back and we're celebrating their wins, and we're celebrating what they did. And we're seeing that same narrative now, where people are like, oh, this is such a controversial topic, but, you know, in a few years, will we be celebrated?
Yeah, absolutely. You can count on that. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, one of the things I've been very impressed by are the Jewish faculty and students who are also supporting the effort that you're doing.
The Jewish support, you know, the biggest narrative that the other side is really pushing is, you know, we're anti-Semitic, we're against the Jewish people as a whole. And that's really not, you know, not correct, and actually really harmful to say, because how can you say that to the people, actual Jewish people who are, you know, supporting it? And then even then, them are saying that is not even a good enough excuse. We're the biggest thing, you know, we strive for, like, equality, we strive for, like, you know, learning and pushing, you know, the Jewish religion. I mean, the Jewish people that I've talked to, the Jewish religion is such a religion that's focused on hell, on humanity, and focused on humans' lives. And so when you're seeing people, you know, dying, the Jewish people cannot go look away. So when they're saying me that, telling me that, and then you have the other side saying that we're being anti-Semitic for saying that, like, it kind of gets confusing. But like I said, because we're in such an educational environment, when you can't argue with facts, and you can't argue with pictures, and you can't argue with numbers. And that's what they're not, that's what the other side's not seeing, and that's what the media is not showing. But like I said, because you're in a university with these perspectives that you don't have on a regular day-to-day, that they're able to, like, you know, change their mind and really have the passion to support this cause. And so we're really lucky and really happy to have them with us, because, you know, they're fighting for this. We're all fighting for the same cause, and that's to, you know, give humanity and give, you know, these people in Gaza and all of Palestine just, you know, a better and safer life.
Yes, yes. When we were talking to Amin earlier, he said dignified, a dignified life. And I think that that's something that we all should be able to, allow one another.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be this very difficult thing. You know, fear has been, unfortunately, too big of a motivator. And people who can manipulate fear can manipulate groups of people. And that's why I wanted you both to be able to talk about your experience and why you're doing it. And I love hearing you both refer to humanity, and that other people have said the same thing, because this is the thing that we share, you know, and it's been hard to find that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has been hard. I mean, we're all human. At the end of the day, it all goes back to us being the same thing. We're all humans. We all have the same anatomy, and, you know, we all bleed the same. So it just, you know, it doesn't make sense to me when people can just see a picture or a video or whatever of, you know, kids, you know, bleeding on the ground because of an airstrike or something, and how they can just be okay with that.
Yeah.
Or look away from that. Like, we're privileged enough to be able to look away. There are people who can't look away.
Right.
Or they look away and they see another atrocity. So, you know, taking our blessings and, you know, being able to raise our voices, because their voices cannot be expressed, is honestly the basis of humanity.
Right. I totally agree with you, which is why I wanted you to be on. And the numbness that I see, you know, I think, you know, people, we've watched war movies, and we're constantly bombarded with violence in this culture. So when we see it, sometimes it's like, oh, yeah, it's just, you know, it's like you don't even know where to put it. Sometimes I think of a sponge, you know, when a sponge is too full, it has to be wrung out. And I think our sponges are so full of violence and fear and hatred. And conscience, you know, it's just not, it doesn't even make sense, some of our fears.
No, it doesn't.
So people, if they're close to Milwaukee, you would welcome them to come by the encampment?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I got people from Madison, people from Chicago. People from out of state are coming to show their support.
So some of these rural folks out here, and they need to maybe make a trip down.
I've had people from, you know, the rural part of, you know, Waukesha and Dane County and Jefferson County, and people have showed up.
Yeah.
You know, and we've also, and I'm honestly, like, really proud that people from because of the encampment movements of Madison and because of the encampment movements of Milwaukee, that we've inspired other UW schools to protest and make a change. We saw Whitewater, you know, make a protest and have their own liberated zone, but not necessarily encampment, just an all-day protest. And that's Whitewater, you know, that's no offense to Whitewater, but it's in the middle of nowhere.
No, darling, we here in Viroqua are in the middle of nowhere.
Yes. Believe me, I come from a rural city. I know exactly how that's like. And then you think schools like Stevens Point and Oshkosh and places that you don't in La Crosse, places that you don't expect to have that support, or like, oh no, they're doing their own thing. But you know, people support, and they're coming out in decent numbers too. So I'm just glad that we're able to inspire them in that way, in that aspect.
Yeah, you really have. And I know I've been part of the Wisconsin Coalition for Justice in Palestine since its inception, which is in October.
Yes.
I'm really, yeah, and I've learned so much, and I've been so grateful for that. You know, 86 diverse organizations statewide that have convened, and how people try to help one another understand, come to understandings, and how people work really hard to hold a peaceful narrative even when a lot of ignorance is being thrown at them. And I think it's really important that we stay in touch with one another. You know, and people can find information about the Wisconsin Coalition for Justice in Palestine at wiscoforpali.org. And you can just look it up, their website, and there's a Facebook page. Same with Students for Justice in Palestine, UWM, and UWM's MSA. You guys have Instagrams that are really very good. There's a lot of really good information if people are on Instagram. And can find you and can learn. So
yes.
Yeah. So who does that? Do you do some of that work on the Instagram?
The Instagram? Oh yeah, that's mostly me and my other board members. We really try our best to update our Instagram, either for events on campus or even just, you know, reposting a video. You know, we have a bunch of people following us from not just students at UWM, but, you know, student alumni and people who just, you know, wanted to follow just to keep up with the news. So we try our best to educate people because, like I said, that we're a perspective that not many students really see, especially on mainstream media. So we like to make sure that we're showing the true perspective and the true, you know, images of what's actually happening.
Right.
Yeah, that's me and my board.
Mm-hmm. No, it's so important. It's so important because the narrative has been so strong, although I see it changing. You know, I've this morning, the shows that I was listening to before I came here, I could tell that the tone, you know, reporters are starting to question some of the really overtly racist narratives that have been coming out. There was a big discussion about how limited the information getting into actual Israel is, that the most of the media is just horribly, I think I might have said this earlier on the show, but I think it's important. They were telling people in Israel that there's no famine in Gaza, that there's plenty of food, and that's why they're not allowing the convoys to come in. I mean, just absurd. It's just absurd, you know. But, you know, if that's all you're hearing, if all you're hearing is people are terrorists, if all you're hearing is they want you annihilated, if all you're hearing are those things, it's very hard to counter that. So we here in the United States, we have to take a position that that we are separated from that, that we're speaking towards humanity and towards peace and understanding that it's possible. Because it is, you know, just because this narrative has gone on for so long, it doesn't mean that it's something we have to keep, you know, giving way to.
I agree, and I'm really glad that you brought the narrative of journalism, because that's how people get their media. But if you're having journalism that are dying, you know, which is not only like an international crime, like it's an international crime under the UN, but it's also, that's how people get their information.
Right.
If you're having biased information, then obviously you're going to have biased people.
Right. Yeah, it's just something that people don't understand, you know, they don't. And you know, I will say I've learned a lot in the last 7 months. I'm allowing my voice to be a little more strident, but at the same time, you know, maintaining that line of peace, you know, regardless.
I agree. And people are, you know, we're here to grow. We're here to we're all living this life at the same time. We're all here to learn. And the fact that, you know, you're able to say that you've grown and say that you've learned is really respectable, because that, you know, people can start as Zionists and then they learn more and they can grow into being anti-Zionist. Like, people are there to grow. And as long as you're willing to change, as long as you're willing to learn and be, you know, have these conversations with an open mind, that's all that we can, that people can do.
Oh, and that's a lot. That's a lot. So thank you. That was very encouraging. Note, that, and it's a good one, you know, it's like, because we often hear the opposite, that it's not possible, that people won't change, and I've always railed against that. It's like, no, it's completely, it doesn't matter how old you are, doesn't matter how young you are, you can unlearn hatred, you can unlearn ignorance, and so I commend you all on what you're doing. I hope I get down there to get some of that delicious food that I know they're making in the, in the restaurants and sending over.
We have so much support from the community. It's such a diverse menu. Please welcome. We will save you a plate.
Okay, I'll let you know. And likewise, if you can find your way to the Driftless and come, we'll have a wonderful time together and introduce people to Muslim people and to Palestinian people, and to, you know, so we can all break bread together.
That sounds beautiful.
Yeah. So I just want to remind everybody that the Wisconsin Coalition for Justice in Palestine is an incredible way to stay in touch with what's happening. The people, I've been so impressed with, you know, when people say that the encampments have been run by outsiders, I just can tell you that the coalition has said, hands off, let the students do it. And so impressive, so totally impressive. But you can find that information at wiscoforpali.org, and you can find Jamila and Amin at SJP, and UWM-MSA on Instagram. So thank you again, Jamila.
Thank you. We appreciate you. Once again, appreciate you for giving us the voice and taking the time to talk with us.
Oh, always, man. Good stuff. You take care, okay?
Thank you. You too.
All right.
And I hope to see you at the encampment.
I hope so, too. I'll have to find a way.
It was so nice meeting and talking with you.
Thank you very much. You too.
Have a great day.
You too.